We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to another BuzzFeed episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Richie, and I'm here to chat about the game that just went final between the Hornets and the Magic from the Spectrum Center. If you missed out on the game and have no desire to go back and watch, I've got you covered here. Before we get into the breakdown of the game, be sure to check out our Substack. And if you subscribe for an annual subscription between now and the end of March, March 31st, you will get 50% off. The link is in the episode notes, but it is buzzbeat.substack.com/March24. That's the digits 24, March 24. So visit that link, consider subscribing to us, consider giving us a written review on Apple Podcasts to support our show. That goes a long way. I know it helps with the algorithm in getting our episodes and our show exposed to more Hornets fans like you. So let's get into this game recap. It seems as if the luster, the shine of these post-trade deadline Hornets is starting to fade a little bit as we get into a five-game losing streak. The final score in Charlotte was 101 Orlando. Charlotte had 89, did not get to the 90-point mark. I know that Orlando is a very, very good defensive team. So this was not really a surprise that they were not able to get those points up. But there were moments in this game where it was close. And but in the end, Magic were just too physical for the Hornets. And I think going into this game, you think about the strengths of Orlando, and it paired perfectly with what the Hornets did not do well in this game. For example, Orlando can turn the ball over. Their defensive turnover percentage, they can get teams to get that ball turned over in steals and get out in the fast break. The defensive turnover percentage in the NBA for Orlando, they turn the ball over or turn teams over at a third highest rate. Hornets turn the ball over 7 times in the first quarter and 19 overall for the game. Orlando, also, they don't allow many offensive boards, 11.5 allowed. That's second least in the NBA. Well, Charlotte was only able to get 3 the entire game. So going into the game, you kind of knew those things about Orlando, and they came to fruition in this game. And obviously, Paolo Banchero, the winner of the Rookie of the Year last season, probably won't win most improved player. I think sometimes being a second year player is always tough to get that award, but he has made strides this season. He's done a little bit of everything. He's gotten efficient all over the court. He can handle the ball. He can pass the ball. He can rebound. He can play out of the post. He can play out of the elbow. He's bringing the ball at the court sometimes. He finished with 22 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists for the Magic. I also thought Wendell Carter Jr. and Jonathan Isaac, even though he's more of a low usage, low utility guy off the bench, I thought both of those players played well and had good games for the Magic. Now, I'm going to shift it over to the Hornets. I'm going to do something a tad different with this post-game episode. I'm going to talk about the players, but I'm going to present a theme, a talking point with a handful of these guys and how that showed up in tonight's game against the Magic. So I will start with Brandon Miller, and my overall trend or my overall theme with him is calm but passive. There were moments when it just didn't feel like he was getting involved. Now, part of that could be him. Part of that could be Bridges and Micić, who like to handle the ball, like to break down the defense. That kills off a lot of the clock. So at that point, maybe Brandon Miller isn't open, or those players are trying to put up a shot. But overall, I wish, especially in this game, especially with some of the players missing, like Cody Martin, Seth Curry, LaMelo Ball, like some of these guards and wings that are out of the rotation, he's got to be a bigger piece. He's got to be a tad more assertive in trying to get his points. He attempted 5 shots in the first half, and that was 4th most on the team behind Bridges with 10, Micić with 8, and Bertans with 6. He just can't be the 4th in line in terms of his field goal attempts. Now, maybe something was said at halftime because he was able to come out of the half in the third quarter. His mentality changed. In that third quarter, I believe he put up 5 shot attempts. He got 15 overall when the game was said and done. But overall, like that was the passive stretch that I'm talking about, that first half. Now, I also mentioned him being calm but passive. So the calmness comes into play where it becomes late in the shot clock. There were several times in this game where opponents try to speed him up, but even with the clock winding down, it doesn't faze him. He's in no hurry. There's no hurry to his game, and he elevates calmly over opponents, even when the opponents have the shot clock working on their side. He only had 7 points in the first half, but one of his buckets late in the second quarter was another late shot clock situation where he uses his body to create some space on a fading baseline jumper. This is probably 2 minutes left in the half. And I think that's an underrated part of his game, because when you look at Brandon Miller, when you think of Brandon Miller, the physical aspect, the physicality, like you don't think of him as a physical player. And we heard about like the mono situation over this past summer and kind of leading up into summer league and leading up to his debut, like that set him back on a physical level. And he's going to have this offseason to hopefully bulk up, but he is not afraid to lower his shoulder. He's not going to shy away from contact. And if that can give him an extra 4 to 5 to 6 inches going sideways by lowering his shoulder, dribbling to his left and pulling up for a baseline jumper, like that is one thing that you just have noticed with him. He plays like a veteran. He knows how to get to his spots. He knows how to use the angles. He knows when to lower his shoulder and create that extra space, being a physical player and not being a guy that's strictly finesse. Because when you look at his body, you're seeing a guy that, you know, could use some extra strength, some extra pounds on him to withstand some of that contact at the rim. But for him to play inside the arc, weaving, keeping players on his back, using his shoulder, lowering his shoulder to create space, that is just another step in the right direction for him. And a lot of times when we hear about Steve Clifford talk about Miller and how he takes things from practice or take things that people tell him 1 or 2 times, he can transfer that over into the game. So when you see these little things pop up in his game, like we're not even talking about his 3-point shot, where I think that's like the flashy part of his game, where he's just drilling 3 after 3 after 3 and he can catch fire. It's more of this other stuff, like that's inside the arc, that's the calm presence that he has when he's out there on the court. Like he's taking things and he's playing like a veteran. It's almost as if he takes parts of other veterans in the game and you see it being presented in his game. So I wanted to present that theme for Brandon. I thought he was passive, but I also thought he was calm. And sometimes those kind of go hand in hand. You would like to see him maybe sped up a little bit and be more aggressive, but I think the fact that he is able to get to his spots and not worry about the defense and still make his shots, you know, that goes a long way. He did finish with 18 points, but it was a quiet 18 points, 5 rebounds and 3 assists for Brandon Miller. Now,
we're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Going over to Trey Mann, the theme that I came up with him in this game, but it probably could be applied to any game that he plays, is the space creation that he creates off of his handle. So space creation from his handle is my overall theme for Trey Mann. Now, he's not been a primary ball handler here in Charlotte, and it looks like Clifford doesn't necessarily view Mann as a point guard, but more of a off guard player. And I think there's a benefit to playing him in both spots. I think there's an advantage in giving him the ball and allowing him to break down the defense. I think there's an advantage in getting him off ball and allowing him to relocate and see maybe when LaMelo gets back and healthy, like how those two play off of each other. But he has shown the ability to break down his defender with his handle. And it's not always a shot from behind the arc. It could be inside the arc too. I believe his first points of this game for him were a result of his like patented step back between the legs, 3-point shot. It came on the right wing. Now that is something that you've become used to since his days in Florida, but I thought the better play was on the next possession on, you know, it's still a step back, but it was within the paint in the mid range area. You know, just coming off that step back three, he gets Wendell Carter Jr. on him. He gets the step back, he pump fakes, and he gets Carter off balance. And then he went right underneath him as he was flying by and hits this 8-foot, 9-foot push shot inside the paint. So, you know, that craft, that ball handling ability from Trey Mann. He even had another move late in the game where he's kind of dribbling up the sideline in semi-transition. There's like 5 minutes left in the game. Anthony cuts him off, and he's able to kind of spin like immediately inside from the sideline, and there's all the room in the world for him to drive inside for a layup. So he, like Miller too, like he's deceivingly physical, and he's deceivingly a guy that's not going to shy away from contact. And even when he's not getting all the way to the rim, all the way to the restricted area, he still does a good job of trying to hit that floater versus the Magic. And he was 2 of 2 in the non-restricted area paint attempts today. And I believe both of those were of the floater variety. Now, I know this doesn't go with the overall theme of the space creation based off of his handle, but I've noted this before. It was after the first three games, and we did an episode about the newcomers. And one of the things that stood out to me, other than the distinct ball handling moves that he has, is just the ability to find the rebound, the ability to find the loose ball. And the fact that he, you know, is probably, you know, one-on-one, he's going to be outmanned on defense, out-physical. Like, he doesn't have that stature to withstand players that are very, very good at driving the ball. We saw that several times against Toronto, but we've seen it, you know, in his time in Charlotte, like he's got to compete and find other ways on the defensive end to create some kind of impact. And I think, you know, locating and high pointing rebounds, like that's something that is just an underrated aspect of his game. He's going to rack up the rebounds as a guard. And that to me jumps off the page. If a rebound hits the floor, like he's the first one there to grab it if he's in the vicinity. So doing the little things on defense, especially when you're not necessarily going to be a guy that is kind of preventing those driving guards or driving wings, he finds other ways to be impactful on that end of the court. So he was very efficient from the field against the Magic, even though it sometimes looks as if he's probably expending too much energy to kind of get off a shot with the way that he kind of dribbles a lot. He likes to handle the ball. He likes to get in between two defenders inside the paint and kind of weave his way. He was still efficient tonight, 7 of 9 from the field, and finished with 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists. Grant Williams is the next player that I want to talk about. The theme that I came up with him is smart, but he pushes the limits. Now, pushes the limits in a good way, but also pushes the limits in a way that could be detrimental to the team. Now, he is one of the headier players, one of the brighter players, smarter players on this team in terms of just kind of locating players on defense, knowing where to be on defense. He knows when to take advantage of mismatches on offense. And, you know, there are some turnovers that come his way, but he's a ball mover. He's a guy that likes to get others involved. And I think one of the headier plays that he had came in the first half when he had a mismatch. And it's times like these where he can't be passive. He got a good read with Anthony Black on him at the high post, and he motioned to some of his teammates to get away, to clear out so he could back him down. And he drove and drew in some defenders off of that. And then he kicked it out to Bridges in the corner. Now, it was an assist because Miles Bridges is, you know, was not on in this game. But I thought it was good recognition from Grant, who sometimes can go through some lulls where he doesn't feel all that involved. And I think, you know, when you go up against a defense like Orlando and some of these more recent teams that can do some harm to you on defense, that probably puts him in a little bit of a rut offensively. But, you know, being smart, being physical, he's a guy that has that in his repertoire. He had another physical play, I believe, in the second half or late in the first. It was a physical play on the right block where he spins, and I believe it was Wagner that was guarding him. And as he spins, he's able to get Wagner on his back. And so he uses his back to shield him from getting blocked and kind of goes up for this layup. So for a game that was very physical, he used his headiness, he used his physical nature, but at a certain point, it did get very testy in the third quarter. There were several technical fouls. Clifford got teed up because he was defending Brandon Miller, who got fouled and stripped, and there's no call on the play. But also, Grant is going to get caught up in those antics, and he loves to have that like enforcer role come out of him. And, you know, by one breath, he can kind of get under the skin of the players. He can draw offensive fouls. He can embellish the contact. And sometimes that works in his favor, but he does get up, caught up in that back and forth action with opposing teams. And it seems like the refs lost control of this game in the third quarter, especially the second half. And he was one of the few players, I feel like, who seems to maybe lose his cool a little bit more often than others. And we saw him like tangled up. We saw him on the floor a lot of times with Magic players, just knocking players over on screens. And sometimes it would work in his favor where he would draw the offensive foul, or other times it would just be, you know, a foul on him. I'm surprised he did not foul out in this game, and, you know, things of that nature. He kind of gets caught up in the back and forth. And so it is a give and take with Grant Williams. And I think his personality is much needed on this team. I think you need a guy like him that is not going to allow other teams to push you around. But in a game like this, when you have some of those injuries pile up, when you don't have the talent around him, it often feels like all these antics are for naught. Like it almost seems more like a show, more so than anything. But overall, like he played smart. He does push the limit at times, and that's kind of why I kept going back to that theme. He finished with 9 points, but five of those came from the free throw line, 2 rebounds and 3 assists for Grant Williams. So it was a pretty ordinary game for Grant Williams. Now, next player we can talk about is Vasa Micic. And my theme for him is on the fly decision making. Now, this is not something new, but we just saw more of it against the Magic. And this was a career game for him. Micic is a very creative player. And I think that creativity works both in his favor and works against him because he wants to try everything. He wants to try things that are kind of pushing the limits for him. He leaves his feet a lot on passes, and that gets him into trouble a lot with his turnovers. He wants to handle the ball a lot and get downhill. And I think that's where he's at his best. Like he's a guy that wants to get others involved. He's a point guard at heart. He knows that his role is to get his other 4 players the best shot possible. And he's very creative. He's very fearless at attacking the hoop. I think that's one of his strengths. But by the same token, it feels like the more he dribbles, the more you hold your breath that he might turn the ball over because he just doesn't have the strongest of handles. He's not the strongest on the ball. We saw that against Toronto in the previous game where late in the game, he just loses the ball. But he had the ball taken from him multiple times in that game, and it's happened before. So it is like Grant Williams. It's a give and take with Micic. A lot of his strengths are highlighted when he has the ball, when he's getting downhill. But a lot of his, I guess, deficiencies are also exposed when he has the ball. And he's not a guy that really you want to use off ball that much. He's not going to be a guy that's relocating for threes. He's not a guy that's efficient from behind the arc. So you need the ball in his hands. You need him to be setting up others. And I think his creativity is one of the best things about his game. And you know, one move that he uses often is called the Pinoy step. It's everyone knows about the Euro step, but this is a move. You could probably just Google it and, you know, attach Halliburton's name to it or Zach LaVine. Like both of those guys use this move a lot. And he on Charlotte uses this move. I would say he's probably done this 8 to 10 times since being in Charlotte. And it creates space for him. It's not something that works every single time, but it's a very creative move. And what it is basically, I'll try to illustrate it as best as possible, but on the first step of your gather, you make like a little ball fake or an up fake. And so as you're kind of on the move and you're gathering the ball, it's almost as if you're making a pass or making a shot, and it often gets the defender in the air. And I think this leads to him making these decisions on the fly. And while he does turn the ball over plenty, he also makes very creative decisions after that first initial ball fake. And he can either shoot it when he's at the rim, or he can pass it depending on what the defense gives him. And he will obviously typically do this near the hoop, so it gives him the option to go up for a layup. But he actually had a variation of the Pinoy step in the first quarter where he makes this fake on the gather at the elbow, and he kind of has this off-balanced jumper that he makes. And like I mentioned, he did have a career night for Charlotte, scoring 21 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. And, you know, good job at driving to the hoop. As I mentioned before, he was 3 of 3 tonight in the restricted area. And I know he had one, possibly two, and once in the process of his drives. He's just fearless getting to the rim, and inside hand layups, reverse layups. Anytime there is someone near him, like I'm not saying he finishes it, you know, always with great efficiency, but it doesn't seem to deter him or to really affect him all that much. I think that's where he's at his best. He's going to get most of his points, I'd assume, getting downhill and to the rim. And his time with Charlotte has proven that. Like he's just been very efficient at the rim. So give and take with him. You like his creativity. You like his ability to make decisions on the fly, but sometimes that gets him into trouble when he's up in the air and then the option gets taken away and he has to make a last second pass where typically there's less power on it and opposing teams are able to take it the other way. So pretty good game for him. I would say between him and Trey Mann, probably the player of the game, but it's all relative when you're comparing it to tonight's game against the Magic. All right, let's switch over to Davis Pertans. The theme that I'm going to come up with that stood out to me was the movement shooting. And it wasn't just on threes. It was on twos as well. Like, his first bucket was a reverse layup off of a baseline cut. And this was in the second quarter. I think it was Micic that was driving. He picked up his dribble in the paint. And Bertans, being in the corner, realizes that, you know, Micic doesn't have a shot at this point. And I don't know who was defending Bertans, but you're obviously going to be kind of stuck a little bit closer to him, knowing that he can hit that corner three. And he just slips right behind him. He catches it and goes, you know, up and under. And on, I think, his next shot, he gets a three-point make that's off movement. So he's constantly moving. And he's one of those players that I've mentioned before that doesn't need to be squared up when he catches the ball and he's getting ready to, you know, leave his feet for the shot. You know, I mentioned this before with Brandon Miller. He's able to kind of catch, square, rotate, shoot all in one motion, and that saves a lot of time. And he's a player that, you know, the Hornets probably desperately need. Like, he's a guy that fills a definite role with three-point shooting. He also came in the third quarter when the game was getting feisty, like I mentioned, with all those technical fouls. And the Hornets seem to be in a cold stretch in terms of the points. And he comes in and hits back-to-back threes with that first one off movement. Again, he's constantly moving on the baseline, trying to find his way up to, like, the wings and the elbow. And that's kind of where he excels, is catching it on the move and turning and firing. And I think the Hornets need a guy like him. I think the question becomes this offseason, is he worth $16 million? Does that feel a lot for a guy that feels like a one-trick pony? I mean, I think probably it is too much for a guy that is strictly kind of pigeonholed for a movement shooter that stretches it, you know, out of the big position. But for a team that struggles to find consistent threats on the outside, it might be worth it to take on that extra $11 million that they'd be paying him if the Hornets kept him versus waiving him this summer, which he's automatically going to get about $5 million anyway. So if you waive him, you're basically eating $5 million in cap space. So can they find somebody for $11 million that fills other needs or fills the gap that he left behind? And maybe there's extra added bonus and checks off some other check boxes, maybe. But I came away from this game thinking, man, like, $16 million might be a lot for Bertans, but it also is making me kind of second guess myself whether or not he's worth it. And, you know, typically on a season to season basis, he's probably not worth $16 million, but, you know, just having him on the Hornets and not being a guy on the opposing team that seems to always give Hornets trouble. I respect a player like Bertans, even though, you know, some of his minutes are just kind of funny to watch because of the nature that, you know, he just chucks threes. But he finished with 14 points, and just as importantly, he had 6 rebounds for the Hornets. The only other note from this game that I made a mention of, I don't necessarily have a theme for this, but Miles Bridges is a guy that needs to play well for this team to be even competitive, and all players have to click. And he's a guy that's just too far up the scouting report to not have a good game. He had a good game, good second half against the Toronto Raptors, but it feels like that momentum just did not carry over at all. And I think the last time we did a post-game episode, we had some of these same talking points, like where there was early volume of shots, but just low efficiency. And I thought he'd get it turned around in the second quarter, third quarter, but it never really came. In the first half alone, he was 1 of 10, and then he finished 3 of 16 from the field. So it was very hard to watch him play this game. A lot of times he was driving, and the Magic were able to push him just enough off of his path that he was attempting shots like on the edge of the paint or the edge of the restricted area instead of making more of a direct line towards the rim. So if you wanted to see a lot of red, go look at his shot chart, especially around the rim, man. It's not good. A lot of volume there, but just a lot of misses. I'm not even sure he made one towards the rim. So that was a very difficult game for Miles Bridges. Let's talk about some trends that I noticed more so before the Orlando game, the four-game losing streak, but some of that stuff continued again tonight. So the Hornets were, what, won five of their six games following the trade deadline, and that was kind of like mid to late February. But now they've lost five in a row: Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Toronto, and now five with Orlando. And I was kind of looking at not necessarily what caused the Hornets to lose those four games, because those are some good teams. Maybe Toronto was a winnable game to have, but other than that, like, they're just outmatched. But I wanted to look at some trends that were happening during that stretch that were, that, you know, maybe was a complete turnaround from those first, that first hot streak following the trade deadline. And one of the things that jumped out to me was the defensive rebounds per game. It dropped from 37.2 to 34.5. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but during that hot streak, that first number, 37.2, was seventh in the NBA in terms of defensive rebounds per game. And in the four games leading up to tonight's game against Orlando, they were dropped down to 19th in the NBA in terms of defensive rebounding. And they only had 28 defensive rebounds tonight, which is something you might have expected anyway, because the Magic do a great job of keeping teams off the glass. And so that probably was just a recipe for a low rebounding game for the Hornets. Now, the other thing that I noticed, and I know that the Hornets haven't necessarily been an awesome three-point shooting team on the whole, but with the new additions at the deadline, you're kind of trying to figure out, where are they going to fall three-point efficiency-wise? Like, where is that going to end up? They have some players that they acquired, like Bertans, like Seth Curry. These guys are good from behind the arc. And in those six games following the trade deadline, they were shooting 38% from deep. And their percentage over the four-game losing streak was 32.4, which was fifth worst in the league. And then tonight, they shot better, 36% against the Magic. But again, like, some of these players need everything going right for them. And the two guys that stood out to me in terms of some of the dips were Trey Mann, compared to these four-game losing streak. He dropped from 46% to 29%. Grant Williams dropped from 39% to 31%. And not only has that happened with Grant, but his volume has gone down too. You see him pump faking a lot and trying to get into the lane. You know, I'm not sure if this is by design. Like, he wants to get inside the three-point arc, or maybe it's a little bit of what the defense is giving him. But we've noticed a little bit of a dip when it comes to three-point shooting. So that is something that the Hornets kind of have to consider moving forward and into the offseason. I'm never expecting this team to shoot 38% for the year, but, you know, going up against better defenses and you know, missing out on Seth Curry for a couple games, like, that doesn't help. But they've got to find some kind of consistency moving forward from behind the arc. The last thing that I probably should mention before we get out of here, because it was a new hire and he made his appearance on Bally Sports. I'm sure you can just kind of Google Jeff Peterson, Bally Sports, and you can find this quick 3-minute interview that he did with Ashley Shamedy. Obviously, he's the new executive VP of basketball operations. There's not much to take away from that on-court interview with him, but the biggest comment that I love to hear, and it's something that I even mentioned in my interview with Kyle Bailey on a couple episodes back, was that he's now being hired before the summer. Like, this is something that he can do to get the lay of the land. He can figure out how things operate here in Charlotte. When you get hired over the summer, which is obviously where most of these hirings take place, as an executive, you're just at a disadvantage. When you're not being hired or promoted from within, you have less of an evaluation. You have less of a kind of like real clear-cut picture on how your players operate together. I think probably the personal relationships are pretty cool too, to kind of create those now. But, you know, watching film is one thing, but being able to kind of adjust on the fly and kind of make your plan for the summer. I think I just never thought this would happen. I thought the summer was going to be when they made this change. But as the rumors started to kind of come about, like around December, January, that maybe they would start to make a move mid-season and Mitch Kupchak would step into a different role, I thought this was a smart thing to do. I didn't know if the pool of available executives would, you know, shrink. because of the timing of it all, but it seems as if the Hornets have like an up and coming 35-year-old guy that's going to, you know, bring a breath of fresh air into this organization. And I'm at least excited about that. I never know. I don't think anyone can really know how involved he's been with some of the moves that they've made over the course of his career. I think it's 11 seasons he's been in some kind of capacity in the front office as an executive with the Hawks and with the Nets. He's got that connection to Rick Schnall as well over in Atlanta. So he's a name that was brought up past like last summer. And it stuck around in the back of my mind as a guy that was always one that would be on the top of the Hornets checklist for interviewees. And yeah, it's worked out for him. And obviously he's made a name for himself this young in his career for a specific reason. I don't think anyone can truly know if you're on the outside looking in, like what exactly his hand was in some of these moves. But yeah, that's my biggest takeaway, is that the fact that he's hired before the summer. And I think that is going to go, it should go a long way in terms of making a plan for the offseason and kind of going from there. So I wanted to thank everyone who joined us for the game recap episode. We always appreciate the support. And if you're listening to this episode, I'm assuming you heard our last episode, but if not, I got the chance to interview Grant Williams, high school coach at Providence Day. His name's Brian Field. He shared some stories, some insight into Grant. A good interview, if I do say so myself. So I appreciate you guys tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you guys next time. Go more.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.